It's the Painless Living Show with host and pain treatment expert, Dr. Michael Cassero, and co-host, John Ashton. If you or someone you love suffers from chronic pain, get answers here. Call now, 888-440-4442. That's 888-440-4442. Or visit online, painlesslivingshow.com.
All right, you've got all the details. Here we are. Good morning.
Yes, it's a good morning.
It is a beautiful morning.
Isn't it?
And Dr. Cassero is here for the next hour to answer any questions you might have considering pain that you may be experiencing. On this side of the radio, the topic is chronic foot pain. But as is usually the case, Dr. Cassero will help and entertain any questions you might have at 888-440-4442 about your feet or any other part that hurts.
That's right. In fact, last week we had somebody called in about foot pain, and our topic this week is foot pain, so maybe we need to synchronize a little bit better with our listeners.
Revisit just a tad. When your feet aren't happy, none of your body is happy.
Sure seems that way. I know it works that way for me.
Yeah.
Especially in the cold. If my feet are warm, I can keep going.
Yeah, well, that's what you're
supposed
to do.
When they get cold, I'm done.
And at night, too, if you're having problems sleeping because it's warm in the summertime, if you stick your feet outside and let them just feel the air without any covering on it, your whole body tends to cool off. It's a place where you lose a lot of body heat, is it not? Your head and your feet?
Well, I'm not going to get into that too deep because my wife and I have an ongoing battle for almost 30 years now over the covers at night, and whether it's too cold or too hot.
Yeah. When someone says turn the air conditioner up, do you make it colder or warmer? I've never been able to tell which.
Yeah. Although I do like that billboard alongside the highway that says, your wife is hot.
What would you say is the most common cause of foot pain, or the most common type of foot pain?
Oh gosh, that's a tough question. But I'd
Nobody
say
said
just
they're going to be easy, Doug.
I'd say the aching that you get from standing on your feet all day for work or whatever, and just without moving around much. Your feet do much better when you're moving around, whether it's walking or just being busy by moving. When you're standing in one place, that's not too good. They tend to swell, and swelling causes pain even if there's nothing else there to cause it.
Right. Now, are the feet similar to the rest of the body where you can, if you exercise, if you walk a lot, they're going to be in better shape and be more apt to take bad situations without hurting as quickly?
The easy answer to that is yes. The monkey wrench in the works is shoes. As long as the shoes are good quality shoes that fit your feet well, then the answer to that's yes. Of course, what our feet were best designed for is walking barefoot. I'm not so sure in our modern world with things like broken glass on the ground.
I was going to say, that's B.C., right? Before concrete.
Before concrete, definitely.
Yeah. Well, let's. It always comes up when we talk about foot pain, so let's delve into it immediately. But let's talk about shoes. How bad are shoes for your feet? And how do you go about making sure that you've got the right shoes?
Okay, first, how bad are shoes for your feet? Well, they're probably about 10 times as bad for your feet as they are for your wallet. So,
okay.
I don't know. It's tough to say. Good-fitting shoes don't necessarily have to be expensive. And cheap shoes are not necessarily poor-fitting shoes. But one of the rules of thumb that I go by personally, and I think it works pretty well for most people, when you first try the shoes on and take those few steps while you're still in the shoe store, if they don't feel good on your feet then, they're probably never going to work out well in the long run.
Yeah, this whole I'm going to take them home and break them in and they'll be fine. That's not really going to work, is
it? No, not in the long run. Yeah. I mean, you might get by when you're in your 20s or 30s thinking that that's working for you, but in the long run, it's not. You'll still be paying the price for it in your 40s, 50s, and 60s.
So, and again, what you've said is there's no correlation between well-fitting and price. But feet are not all the same size, but, well, neither are shoes, actually. A 9.5 or 10 may be a different size inside. So you really just can't judge from what the last size of shoe you wore. You need to get measured, don't you? And
fit. Yeah, when I was a kid and you went to the shoe store, they had a guy there that worked at the shoe store that had this thing for measuring your feet.
Yeah.
And it seemed like he measured about 5 or 6 different things on your foot. And then went back and pulled out a pair of shoes and you'd try them on. Well, nowadays, if you're lucky, they have one of those things to fit your foot in to see how long it is and how wide it is.
And if you're very lucky, there'll be somebody there that knows how to use it.
Probably another customer.
Yeah.
But the thing is that when you look at the shoes come just in sizes, whether it's a full size or half size, and in widths, and there's not a lot of choices there. And when you really look at all the different things about the width of the front of the foot, the back of the foot, the height of the arch, you know, the length of the foot, all of the different parameters, there are a whole lot more options. So what you find is that there might be one manufacturer of shoe that just isn't going to fit your foot no matter what you do. One size is going to be too big and the other is going to be too small and there's not going to be a Goldilocks shoe there for you.
Right.
So that's when you have to go to another manufacturer. And the really hard part about this is even if you get the exact same shoe that you had last time that worked out so well for you, if it's not made in the same factory, let alone the same country, then it's probably not going to be the same shoe.
And that leads to, well, some bad things down the road, some serious problems sometimes. I know you have a problem with high heels.
No, really, I don't at all. I just quit. I quit wearing them. I don't wear them anymore.
But I have heard you counsel people of the female persuasion that maybe indeed they should go with lower heeled shoes.
Yeah, they should. I mean, I understand the vanity aspect
sure.
of high heels. But, you know, vanity just goes so far, and there's a big price to pay for that vanity. And it's not just sore feet. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, I'll put up with the sore feet just to look good in the high heels. But it's all kinds of other things affected by that also. In your spine, it could go all the way up to headaches, but certainly low back pain, neck pain. It can affect your digestion,
too.
We were talking about swelling and circulation at the beginning. It can affect that. So there's widespread effects because if you look at what those direct effects are, but then once you've got headaches, what are the secondary consequences of that or the low back pain? And it's everything's connected together. So in the long run, it ends up affecting everything.
You know, you mentioned earlier also that standing leads to foot pain because of the swelling, you know, when you're not moving and things like that. But why does it seem that it hurts worse when you're standing on a hard surface as opposed to standing still on a soft surface? Like if you're standing on a concrete floor as opposed to a carpet, it tends to hurt more quickly. Maybe not more painful, but it comes on more quickly.
Well, I've certainly noticed the same thing myself, and I don't know that I have a scientific answer for it, but I think that when you're on a soft surface, you're less likely to be standing in one place.
Okay.
When you're on concrete, it's because that's where you work and that's where they put you.
Stay here. 888-440-4442. Chronic foot pain. We're going to be talking about bone spurs and pains and pins and needles and all kinds of stuff that can happen with your feet and the consequences, too. I'm going to take a quick break right now, but we will be right back.
To learn more about the topics or products mentioned on the program, visit our website, painlesslivingradio.com.
And to get in today with a question about foot pain or any sort of pain you may be suffering, it is 888-440-4442. And I believe, do we have a caller yet?
Yes, Marcia's still getting the information, so.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just sit here and stall just a tad while it's going on. You can also go to painlesslivingshow.com, painlesslivingshow.com, and click on the contact button and send an email directly to Dr. Cassaro, and you'll get an answer personally. Not while he's on the air, but some people prefer to do it more privately.
It's always better, though, to call in. Actually, the best thing would be to call and make an appointment, see me in the office, because then I could do a physical examination. But even if you can't do that, call in on the air, because I can ask a lot of those secondary questions to get a little more detail.
Sure.
The trouble with the email questions is a lot of times there's a piece of information that didn't seem important to the person who was writing the message, but to me, it's
very important.
I can't really give a good answer without it.
That's right. Well, at least to start a conversation back and forth. But again, the number here, 888-440-4442.
And we're not going to have a caller right now.
Oh, okay.
That person was not wanting to go on the air, just wanting to let us know that there was somebody listening.
Well, there you go. Well, then that takes us back to the whole topic of painlesslivingshow.com. Maybe they would feel more comfortable sending a question via email, as did this person. It says, Doctor, I've got gout. It used to hit me once or twice a year. Now it seems like it never leaves completely. Just when one foot is getting better, the other foot flares up. Usually my big toe, but it hits other parts of my feet, too. I take gout medicine. I hardly eat any meat, but nothing seems to make much difference. Why is this getting worse? How can I get over an attack easier? And I'm getting ready to go on a cruise. I want to enjoy it. I want to sit in a deck chair while everyone else tells me how much fun they're having. I can relate to that. So what should she do?
Well, I guess take the deck chair with them to have the fun. You know, gout's a tough problem when you're talking about that because it does incapacitate them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that there's a little bit of the voice of experience in that question, because if you've got such severe pain in your foot that you can't stand on it and bear weight, it makes it real hard to go
anywhere
having fun. Even on a cruise ship that's not really all that big, you got to go up and down steps, walk back and forth across the deck, pool bar, things like that.
All the important stuff, all the big sights.
Yeah, that can be a tough thing to do. I'm not sure what gout medicine he's taking. Okay, it's not stated there. There's two main categories that gout medicines fall in: the ones that are used to treat an attack, and the ones that are used to prevent future attacks. The really hard part is that the gout, even though it's been there apparently for a long time, once or twice a year, that's still frequent. Okay, so this person has a big problem with gout. But now it's becoming more constant. I'd wonder, my first question is, what other medicines are being taken besides the gout medicines? And I would bet that there's some new medicine that was added shortly before these gout attacks started getting more frequent. And that's probably where you need to look. What else could be causing the gout? Because there's nothing that you take that has no side effects at all.
Right.
And a lot of these medications may not interact with each other to make you explode, but they may interact and make your toe feel like it's exploding.
Right.
So medication interactions is really near the top of the list as far as how to figure out why these are getting worse and what can be done to decrease the frequency. Next on the list would be, you know, I know that eating meat has always been, over the years, identified as the culprit in causing gout. But
in fact, I heard it referred to as meat eater's disease.
Yeah. It may have some influence, but it's really insignificant compared to sugar. Yeah, and the thing is, the more the, especially the carbonated soft drinks you're drinking, if you're already predisposed to having gout, the more likely you are to have more gout attacks.
Okay.
And without having any more information about sugar intake, especially the simple sugars, I'd bet that that's probably a big part of the reason for both the increased frequency and the apparent ineffectiveness of the medicines.
Wow. Ooh. That would be, I mean, is there a chart that can tell? I mean, if someone were to come to you and say, I have gout, it's getting worse, I also have X, and I'm now taking this medicine, can you say definitively that that is the cause for the flare-ups, or...
Yes, as a matter of fact, that's a tool that people can use on their own at home.
Oh, okay.
Nowadays, you can just put into the Google search engine drug interactions and type in the names of your medicines, and up will come up a few different tools, but there are two or three prominent that will come up on the first page, and you just type in the medications that you take. And it'll tell you whether there's any direct drug interactions.
Yeah,
now, you may miss out on some of the minor or indirect interactions, but all the big ones will show up. And those are the ones you got to start with. That's probably what's contributing to things like this gout.
Oh, fantastic.
It's not the little minor things.
And then you can make your calls to the specific physician and ask what to do from that point on.
Well, when you say specific physician, that's a big part of the problem is we've divided medicine up into so many different departments that you may have, even if you're a fairly healthy person, you may have three or four different doctors each prescribing a different medication. And one doctor doesn't want to step on another doctor's toes, so they just keep prescribing and not really looking at the interactions.
And those medicines may not play well together. 888-440-4442. That is a phone number. We are going to go to the phones right now.
Yes, we're going to talk to Deanna in Clarksville, Indiana. Deanna, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you this morning?
Arthritis for several years. My rheumatologist, I'm on methotrexate each Friday, and then I started the infusions every 8 weeks, and for my hands, because my hands are bending and everything. So I told Dr. Eason, I said, I'm so tired because this is really chemo medicine that I'm taking. And he told me to take CoQ10, and that would help my energy level.
Well, that's true. Coenzyme Q10 will help with the energy level, but I'm not so sure that the primary problem is a CoQ10 deficiency, unless you're taking a cholesterol-reducing medicine.
No, I don't have to take cholesterol.
Yeah. The coenzyme Q10 does help. Okay, there's real good data to show that, but the side effects of the medications that are causing you to feel like you have low energy and lethargy, that's not from a CoQ10 deficiency.
I know, but it's the chemo drugs, because methotrexate is a chemo drug.
Yes.
And the infusion is, too. So
yes.
I think that's what makes me so tired.
That's right.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. It's not a problem with a deficiency of coenzyme Q10 just because you're on those medicines. It's direct side effects of those medicines. And one of the other ways to treat rheumatoid arthritis is to try to tone down the aggressiveness of your immune system attacking your joints. And you can do that to an extent with just diet, changing your diet, and maybe taking some simple nutritional supplements like vitamin D.
Vitamin D.
Yeah, anybody that has an autoimmune condition should take vitamin D so that your vitamin D levels stay in the upper end of the normal range.
And I usually do take vitamin D, like 2,000 a day.
Okay. Has anybody done blood testing to see what your blood levels of vitamin D are?
Yes, my family doctor and the rheumatologist does that, yes.
Okay. Do you know what those numbers, what those results are?
I don't remember.
Okay. The normal range from the laboratory for vitamin D starts at 30, goes from about 30 to 100. But 30 is really kind of low. So to get the best effect for somebody that has autoimmunity like rheumatoid arthritis is to make sure you're in that range somewhere around 60 to 80, maybe even a little higher. So I suspect that the 2,000 units a day that you're taking is not enough to get you up that high in the range.
Yeah.
So
I know one time my family doctor said that my vitamin D level was too high, but I thought, well, I still did keep on taking it, though, because, you know, with all this stuff I'm putting in my body to help stop the immune system, I thought I probably did really need it.
Okay, that music in the background means we're getting ready to go to a break, so I want to ask you to hold on through the break,
okay. And
we'll talk a little bit more about what you can do when we come back.
Okay, thank you.
If you have a question, just get in line, 888-440-4442, and stick around. We will be right back.
It's the Painless Living Show. To be part of the program, call now, 1-888-440-4442.
Just like Diana did, and she hung on, and we're going to go back to the phones now.
Yes, are you still with me, Deanna?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, right before the break, we were talking about the vitamin D levels.
Yes.
And what I would suggest is that when you do get the laboratory testing done from your doctor, go ahead and ask them for a copy of it. And that way you can take it home and see what the results are and maybe even look up online and see what they mean.
I don't have a computer, so.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes it a little bit harder to look up online. Okay. But it does make it easier to see from one visit to the next whether your numbers are moving in the right direction or the wrong direction.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that the only thing? You said something about food. But
yes.
Is there any other supplement to take?
Well, there are a number of supplements that can be taken to improve rheumatoid arthritis. But I want to talk about the food first because I think that's more important. The things in your food that are likely to aggravate rheumatoid arthritis, they don't cause it, but they're going to make it worse, are grain products. That's things like bread, cereal, and pasta, and products made from milk. So that'd be your milk, cheese, yogurt, things like that.
Okay.
And I'm more specifically talking about cow's milk. So if you can limit those in your diet, and of course limit sugar because that will make anything that hurts hurt more. So limit the grains and the dairy products, and that can really calm down rheumatoid arthritis quite a bit. Now for people with rheumatoid arthritis, there's also another class of vegetables that can be particularly irritating, and that's what's called your nightshade vegetables. Potatoes, tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants. So if these are things that you eat a lot of, that could be contributing to your rheumatoid arthritis, or at least the severity of the symptoms.
Okay.
As you try to limit those in your diet, you may get better even just doing that. But then other nutritional supplements that can help a lot would be things that help with immune system function. And at the top of the list there, I'd put just a good multivitamin and some fish oil and some minerals. And that's good recommendation for just about anybody, no matter what their ailment is.
Okay.
And then specifically for rheumatoid arthritis, you can take things that cut down on inflammation because that's an inflammatory arthritis. So then you're talking about things like turmeric, which is also considered a spice, but it's a nutritional supplement. And it can help quite a bit with that.
Okay.
And then probiotics. Probiotics.
Like yogurt and stuff?
Well, you could take capsules, but the problem with yogurt or cheese is that even though they might have probiotics in them, they're also made from milk.
Okay.
So more I'd be talking if you want probiotic foods, things like sauerkraut, or there's a fermented tea called kombucha tea, or kombucha tea, depending on how you want to pronounce it. You can buy that at a lot of health food stores. You can even make your own. And then there are other versions of fermented foods like naturally fermented pickles. You can buy kimchi, or which is a like an Asian version of sauerkraut. And a variety of fermented things like that. When you eat, you get a lot more probiotics through the food than you could ever get in a probiotic capsule. But if you don't like those foods, the probiotic capsule is better than not getting additional probiotics at all.
Okay. Oh, and one other question. A few weeks ago, a man was there, and he said he had neuropathy in his feet, and you asked him, first question, did he have diabetes? He said no. And the second question you asked him, did he work with chemicals? And he said yes. So you were saying that the chemical, if you work with in a chemical plant, that can mess with your feet?
Yes. Yeah, exposure to chemicals can cause neuropathy, very similar to what happens from diabetes.
Okay. Is it just in the feet that it affects? Because a lady from church, her daughter works in a chemical place, and she's starting to have trouble with her feet. So that's probably why, even though... I don't know. I think she does the beakers and all those kind of things, so... breathing that in, even though she has her shoes on, breathing that in still can make you have neuropathy.
Yes. Yes.
So would they wear a face mask? Is there any way to help prevent that or something?
Well, if she's getting exposure to fumes like that, then there's probably some safety precaution that's not being followed properly. And she should first look at if she's following all the proper safety precautions. And if not, she should probably talk to whoever at her place of employment is in charge of workplace safety.
Okay.
Because these days, the work environments have all been addressed. You know, I can't say that there's anything that's 100% secure as far as exposure from toxic chemicals. But there are safety procedures that, when they're followed, should minimize the exposure. And that's always the key, is when they're followed. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, it's people that just feel confined by a mask or whatever, and so they don't wear it.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Cassara. I listen every week.
Well, that's good to know. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling, and good luck with your own arthritis.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And thank you. 888-440-4442. That is the phone number here if you have any questions about any sort of pain you're dealing with. Chronic foot pain is the topic of the day on this side of the radio, and we dealt with gout.
Well, before we go much further, I'd like to talk about, she asked an interesting question there about somebody that's wearing shoes and still getting neuropathy in the feet because of possible exposure to chemicals that are being breathed. The damage doesn't necessarily occur from chemicals getting on the feet.
Right.
The reason that the feet get affected is those are the longest nerves. So whenever these toxic chemicals get into your body, whether you breathe them in, whether you swallow them, they soak in through your skin, it doesn't really matter how it gets into your system. Once it's in there, it circulates all through your body, and it does its little bit of harm everywhere. So if you have a nerve that's going all the way down to the end of your feet, there's a lot longer area on that nerve that a little bit of harm along the way is going to make a bigger difference over 3 or 4 feet than it will for a nerve, say, to your shoulder that might be 8 or 10 inches long at the most.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. I have a buddy who complains when we play golf together that if he has to walk too far, his ankles start hurting. And we're talking, you know, 10 steps, and suddenly he's like, oh, where's the cart? Is that just a case, you think, of maybe weak ankles? And what is that? Or what kind of stuff would you look to somebody who, when they start to walk, immediately their feet hurt from the ankles down?
I think I'd still look at shoes first.
Okay.
But, you know, 10 feet, that's not far.
No.
And unless this is somebody that's infirmed otherwise, I'd wonder if it's really an ankle problem. It sounds more like a low back problem to me.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I do see a lot of golfers, and they're always wanting to get back on the course, and they're always focusing on what could it be about my swing and how can I improve my swing so it doesn't hurt my back. The swing has virtually nothing to do with it.
Okay.
It's the cart.
Really?
Yes, it's all the bouncing in the cart, especially those things are not known for their suspension.
Oh, that's true, then.
Or for the shock absorbers.
Yeah.
And the golf carts, even if you're on the cart path, that's not exactly the smoothest surface.
No.
But they're really off-road vehicles.
Okay.
So you bounce around quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's the problem with the low back and playing golf. So maybe he should start walking the whole course.
So you suck it up and you walk the course.
There you go.
And you're going to be better off.
He won't complain about his feet. He'll be complaining about keeping up with the guy with the cooler.
Yeah. It's really hard to carry the cooler when you're walking. That is a problem there. When you talk about alignment, like back, hips, legs, feet, is that something that gets thrown out of kilter just by life? And is that something that maybe traction at home can help fix? Or what's the deal with
that? Well, the quick answer to the last part is, yeah, traction at home can help with that quite a bit. Using an inversion table is a great way to help undo a lot of the bumps and grinds of the day. As far as the first part of the question, I think that there are things that we do, usually through either requirements on the job or for habits that we have about things that we're doing at home that cause us to start standing asymmetrically, you know, preferring one foot over the other. And then that leads to things over time that can have problems worse on one side than the other.
Wow. All right. 888-440-4442 or painlesslivingshow.com. Hit the contact button. And you will be whisked immediately to Dr. Cassaro's email, and you can ask a question that way. We've talked a little bit about what happens when your bottoms of your feet hurt, your arches hurt, your ankles hurt. Sometimes you get a pain on the top of your foot, and that, for some reason, just got to be a pain in the foot, you figure. We'll talk about that when we come right back.
It's like an office visit without the copay. The Painless Living Show.
888-440-4442. That is a phone number. And chronic foot pain is the topic. And we've been hitting a lot of the high and low points of foot pain. But a lot of times, the tops of your foot will hurt. And sometimes you get a little bit of relief when you loosen your shoes or whatever. So you say, well, it's definitely a shoe problem or definitely a foot problem as opposed to a nerve problem somewhere else in your body. Would that be an accurate statement, or is it another one of those, well, if your feet hurt, you got a problem somewhere else?
Most of the time when people have pain in the top of their foot, it's right where the bones that end up reaching down the length of your foot to go to your toes, where those bones join up against the bones that make up your ankle and that big hind foot where your heel is and everything. And that's a pretty complex joint there, or set of joints. And when you get arthritis in there, it can hurt with a variety of different things, but the classic thing is you can't raise up onto your toes without feeling like somebody's jabbing a knife in that. And that makes it real hard to walk properly.
It does.
Because you use your toes to push to the next step.
Yeah.
And certainly if you're talking about running or reaching up overhead, anything like that, it can really interfere a lot. So, you know, it's a real thing that's caused in the foot. There are other things outside the foot that can cause pain in the top of the feet. But this is a common thing. And there's a lot of things that can lead to that arthritis. And believe it or not, one of the suspected to be one of the leading things is it all starts with dropping things on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
You get that little trauma, and then 10 or 15 years go by, maybe a little bit more,
yeah,
and that degeneration just gradually progresses until you finally have a spur that's big enough to dig into the cartilage when you step the wrong way, and you've got full-fledged arthritis.
Mm. I would imagine that one of the main culprits to foot pain in general would be furniture and nighttime forays.
Oh, yeah, stubbing the toes. And yeah, once you stub that toe, it's a magnet for chair legs and table legs from then on out.
Yeah. Is it also, is it a wives' tale, or is it accurate that should you do something dumb, even as a child, like sprain an ankle, that your ankles now become more susceptible to injury?
If it's a minor sprain, no, I don't think so. But okay, a serious sprain, yes. Because what that ligament is, it's kind of like a rope that's been overstretched,
mm-hmm,
and it starts to fray. And even though you take the stretch off of it, that rope, if those frayed ends can't get connected back together,
mm-hmm,
they're just going to heal out in loose air. Just gotcha. Same way the ligament, you know, if the ligament ends are not together where they can build a scar between them, then they're just going to scar the ends over, and it's going to be a smaller ligament than mm-hmm it used to be.
Mm-hmm. What about the stuff we see advertised all the time now, the compression socks, the braces, things like that? I mean, would they help, like, with problems from, like, swelling? If you're going to be on your feet and you know your feet swell when you stand up for one reason or another, if you have something that tends to push the swelling back in, is that actually going to help, or is that just a cosmetic thing that's all on your head?
Well, it's a little bit of both, but it does really help as far as the pain goes. It's a comfort thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's not any damage that's being caused, and you're not preventing any damage by wearing it.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, if it's your feet and you got to stand on them and you don't want them to hurt, wear the compression socks.
Yeah.
And you don't need to get the high compression socks. You can get the regular over-the-counter compression socks. You can buy them online. You can buy them at stores. Drug stores might have them, but medical supply
mm-hmm
places will have them. And you don't need a prescription for the right low compression. Wear them like you would wear regular socks. They're a little more expensive than regular socks, but wear them the same way, just the knee-high socks, and your feet will feel better when you got to stand on concrete all day.
What about the stuff infused with copper? Is that science, or is that marketing?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, there is some science to the copper.
Okay.
But I think that most of that, especially where they're weaving it into socks and things,
mm-hmm,
most of that is marketing.
Okay.
Now, copper is an essential mineral mm-hmm in your body. Most people get all the copper they need through their diet, but you can wear copper bracelet or copper ankle bracelet, something like that,
mm-hmm,
and it will soak through your skin, and it'll leave on its way through, it'll leave a kind of a greenish-blue path. As it goes, it'll stain your skin, and that's just a sign that the copper is going into your body, and that can help with arthritis.
Okay.
But whether it's any better to have it woven into the compression sock,
yeah,
I doubt it, and it'll certainly add to the cost of the compression sock.
And again, you know, you've mentioned, as you do for whatever the pain problem is, diet, sleep, exercise.
Have I talked about those?
Yes, you have. Ad infinitum, I might say. Minerals, some fish oil, you mentioned that. Shoes, we've talked about that. Again, magnesium, an Epsom salt bath.
Magnesium is a mineral. That's mm-hmm one of the minerals I talk about. But if we're talking about aching feet,
mm-hmm,
you know, get one of those. Even if you don't want to buy one of those foot bath things, just get a small trash can.
Yeah.
And put some Epsom salts and water in there. And at the end of the day, while you're sitting down reading or watching TV or whatever, mm-hmm, soak your feet. Yep. It's amazing.
Yep. All right. Phone number here, 888-440-4442. We have time for one more, so let's run to the phones right now.
Yes, we've got a caller on the line. I'm hoping to get through. Hello, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show.
Hey, Dr. Sarah. My problem is I have a Charlie horses in my instep. I do the toe raises, the heel raises, the stretches, and if I say use my toes, you know, to kind of curl your toes, it will go into a Charlie horse that will put you out. I was wondering what I could do to deal with that.
You get it about the same on both feet?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, boy, it will go into a Charlie horse that will bring tears to your eyes.
Okay. Most of the time when you get those Charlie horses, there's a combination of nerve irritation and mineral deficiency. The two most common minerals to be deficient would be, or at least the two we talk about the most, would be potassium or magnesium. Another one that's frequently a culprit is iron. Okay, so that would be one thing to look at, is the state of, you know, how much mineral content you have.
I should be good on all sides of that. I don't take any medicines either.
And then the other thing would be nerve irritation, and that could be up higher in your legs, could be at your knees or hips or low back, or it could even be all the way up to your neck.
Huh. I was kind of curious. Man, it will go down. You can't even. It will curl your toes back to your heel, and it had me up. Like I say, I should be good with potassium and iron. I wear the best boots, and like I say, I always keep best tube socks too, you know. I was just kind of what your take was, but I'll look into that.
Well, I'd see about getting an x-ray of your hips, your low back, and your neck.
I've had a hip replaced, and I've got a knee that's absolutely shot on the other side.
Okay, I think we're on to something there. This is probably some nerve irritation being caused, probably not by the replacement, but by the problem that led to the arthritis that made it bad enough where it needed a replacement.
Which just really showed up. It didn't show up just after the surgery. It's just now showed up. But I'll look into the mineral thing, and to the irritation, I'll bring it up with my family physician.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Dr. Sarah.
All right. Thank you, Danny. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling, and good luck.
Hey, man, you're a lot of help, man.
Thanks, oh, you're
brother.
Welcome.
Appreciate the good words, Danny. Yeah, and thank you for not saying eat more bananas. That seems to be every time I get a cramp, my wife says, hey, I have a banana.
You know, the interesting thing is bananas do have a lot of potassium, and potassium is what's frequently identified as a mineral that leads to cramps when it's too low. But how bananas got singled out is beyond me, because any other fruit there in the produce department has just as much potassium, you know, an apple or a pear, just as much potassium as that banana.
Again, marketing. And the question I would have is, why do those Charlie horses and those cramps usually hit you in the middle of the night?
Well, that's because in the middle of the night, you're laying in one place, not moving around as much. And if you've got a bone spur or something pushing on that nerve fiber that makes its way down to your feet. When you irritate the nerve, you don't always get the pain where the nerve is irritated. You get it where the nerve goes.
Ah.
That's why you get them worse at night.
Okay.
It's because you're still, and if you're resting on that sweet spot, guess what?
There
it's going to let you know you need to move.
And that's ironic. It lets you know you need to move while creating a situation where it's impossible to move.
That's what happens.
I want you to write this down, 888-440-4442. That is the phone number, painlessslivingshow.com. That is the website. And you can always follow the doctor on Twitter.
At Painless Living.
And then the Facebook page.
Painless Living Radio Show.
Saturday mornings at 11. You can do it, Danny. And other people do, is be here every Saturday and listen intently. It's going to help.
That's our goal. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Cassaro.
And I'm co-host John Ashton. Together, we will be back next Saturday and every Saturday at 11, right here.